Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
From the Kia Studios in Midtown Atlanta, this is Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P here with you for another 2.5 hours. We continue to take you up to Atlanta United versus NYCFC. Telephone number to call, 404-741-0929. That is also the number for the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. We'll read some text here as we go throughout the afternoon. Coming up in about 17 minutes' time, we're going to talk a little college football with my man Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. We'll get some Georgia chat in. We'll get some ACC chat in with the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets and also kind of get you a full scope of what's going on around the world of college football, SEC, and beyond. We were talking Falcons a little bit going into the break, and it leads very much right into where I want to go next, because I did want to give you some of my more, broad observations from Thursday night. And the one thing that I do have to caution people of doing is that they look way too much into the result of the game. And in my Falcons, looking at the way that this goes, it's very, very difficult to look at the way that this thing plays out, not necessarily from the way that you look at it on the scoreboard. And the other part of this that I find very interesting is that people are looking at this and saying, oh my goodness, they lost, they haven't won a preseason game in a couple of years, this is bad for next year, this is bad for depth. The one thing that I look at from this is that they're taking a strong evaluative nature at this football team, because the depth got tested in a very deep and profound way this past season. And it goes kind of back to what one of the previous callers said, is that, you know, any team would be different going down to their third safety and things of that nature. And everyone was talking about how this team lost as much as it did defensively, and they needed to at least play it in a different way. But I think that they're taking last year and trying to spin it forward and say, okay, who can step up and be counted on to play meaningful snaps? And I think you saw that in the first preseason game when you saw the development and the real maturity of a guy like a John Kaminsky. I think you saw a lot of that when we saw the kind of game that Austin Larkin had at defensive end. Even a guy like Jermaine Grace, who is somebody who probably will make the depth, but as a result, might be somebody more for special teams. But you saw his closing ability. You saw a couple of other guys step out. I think Kenyon Barner is somebody who needs to make this football team. And he's going to be somebody who, you know, might push a guy like a Brian Hill or an Ito Smith or a Tony Brooks James off this roster because of his ability not only to be a return man, but also possibly somebody who could be a punt gunner, somebody of that nature. I think Allison had himself a good game. And the one other thing, too, is that after seeing the way that Matt Schaub looked in the first preseason game, he looked very much more stable in the second preseason game. And, you know, 12 of 19, 172 yards, only sacked once, had a rating of around 92. You weren't really impressed by Matt Sims, were you? I think Sims is just kind of holding a place on this roster. They'll keep Benkert maybe as an injured reserve, practice squad type quarterback, just as somebody when he gets back from that foot injury, as somebody who stays as a developmental guy on this football team. Matt Sims is somebody who knew the system and could basically have competence with the offense. I don't think he has a long-term spot with this football team. But I do feel that you're seeing guys like Barner, Zacchaeus had a couple of plays. And how about Russell Gage? Russell Gage needs to make this football team. He really does. He's somebody who, depending on the depth chart you look at with Gage, probably the number two guy behind Julio Jones, and somebody who was a sixth-round pick a year ago, it's you really didn't expect much out of him, but he is somebody who you can look at and say, he can play meaningful snaps. And that is what the preseason's all about. It's finding guys who can play meaningful snaps. I don't need to see Mohamed Sanu. I don't need to see Julio Jones. I don't need to see Calvin Ridley. The one other thing, too, I found interesting is that it seems like Chris Lindstrom really looks the part. And the one thing, and I've referenced this conversation a couple times that I've been on here, Therese Paylor of the Yahoo Sports NFL podcast and does a lot of their national writing as well, senior NFL writer for Yahoo Sports, said something to the effect of having two rookies on one side of the line, like Chris Lindstrom and Caleb McGarry, like they're going to have at least, they believe, by the end of the season, or at least by the time McGarry gets back from his off-the-field procedure, is something that could be kind of dangerous. And it's not to say that you wanted somebody like McGarry to be injured, but I almost feel like that injury is a blessing in disguise for Lindstrom, because I think having a guy like Sombrello in between him and, of course, Alex Mack on the other side, I think that's going to provide a very nice cushion for him to be able to mature. He had a couple of very cool, very very good kick-out blocks, and you saw his ability come out there. You saw Jamon Brown also have a couple of very nice blocks, had a nice kick-out block on the one touchdown run. And even a guy like Matt Gono, who, you know, is somebody who will be pressed for playing time unless something happens to Sombrello or Jake Matthews. But he's somebody who I saw flash in a positive way. And not that Vic Beasley is somebody who you have completely out the door, but I think there's proof that Atlanta can replenish that loss if it happens with the triumvirate of Larkin, Kaminsky, and Chris Odom, who also looked good in the game on Thursday. Of course, Dan Quinn has made it almost his, I would say, almost his personal milestone to try and at least get Vic Beasley back to the 15-sack guy we saw 2 years ago. And I think, if you're a Falcons fan and you're being honest with yourself, if you took one of the two, would you rather have Vic Beasley have a bad season and re-sign because he doesn't have value? Or would you rather have a situation with Vic where he balls out in the contract year and you might lose him? In my mind, I think if you see him over the course of the year develop, I'd rather see him get the most out of himself as possible. Here's what Dan Quinn had to say about the fact that he's made Vic Beasley his personal project when it comes to this camp.
We've worked hard in the individual skill set piece to carry it over into the team session. We've studied a lot. We've been pushing good to get our conditioning right. So much of pass rushing is about the finish. And so when we get chances to demonstrate that, you better find moments to do it. But he's definitely had some places in this camp that he's been difficult to block off the edge.
404-741-0929 is the phone number here on Sports Radio 99 The Game. We'll talk some Falcons, some college football, and some Braves as we continue. I will say this, though. You are in a situation with this division that is going to make it very, very difficult, because the variance between all three of these teams and what they can do this season is very, very wide. I do think that it is going to run out for the Saints at some point. The Drew Brees thing has to run out at some point. And that means you're looking at both the Falcons and the Panthers are the two teams that might be the future of this division. Because you have two quarterbacks in the middle of, or at least on the downhill slope of their prime, that are going to keep you in a window where you can win football games, which is why I don't take the pessimistic outlook that a lot of people take on both the Falcons and the Panthers. I think the Falcons have the kind of talent to have a sustained run in the NFC South. But I also think that clinging to this idea that you lost as many people last year on defense as you did, to me, is something that is looked at as almost kind of, I don't want to say an excuse, but I don't like clinging to that particular mindset, because who's to say that they come back and perform at the level that they performed at before their injuries? And no, I'm not saying that you're not going to get the requisite type of play out of a guy like a Keanu Neal or Ricardo Allen or an Isaiah Oliver. We've seen great flashes from DeMonte Casey, especially at the nickel position. But you know, getting 2016 Vic Beasley back is not a guarantee. Deion Jones is going to be possibly an All-Pro, but what's around him at the linebacker position? What do you expect out of Devondre Campbell? What do you expect out of a guy like a Carter or an Olokun? I mean, the guys like this, Jermaine Grace, who we talked about earlier. I mean, that type of stuff has to, at least from your perspective, make you feel a little shaky and wary, because if you are the Falcons, this defense has to be miles better than it was in 2018 in order for you to compete for this division, because you're going up against a renewed offense in Carolina, Tampa Bay, where, quite honestly, I'm still not a believer, but they seem to have a lot of optimism going forward for their particular football team. And, of course, New Orleans, who has Drew Brees, who continues to find the fountain of youth. Where that fountain comes from, I'd like access to that spigot. But resolved, I do think there's optimism for the Falcons in 2019 as a result of what we've seen so far through two games of this preseason, because you've been trying to fortify your depth. And I think that part of it has certainly been a goal, despite the fact that it hasn't provided results on the field. Sharp left turn. We're going to talk a little college football. Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com. I'm going to ask him the same question that I've asked a lot of the national college football writers over the course of the summer and coming in here to the fall. Is there a closing window for the Georgia Bulldogs, and does it coincide with this being Jake Fromm's potential final year with the Bulldogs? That comes your way next on Sports Radio 929 The Game, 929TheGame.com, and the Radio.com app. Sports Radio 929 The Game and 929TheGame.com. We now head to the WadeFord.com hotline. We're joined by good friend Dennis Dodd of CBSSports.com to talk a little college football with us. Double D, let's start at the top. Alabama-Clemson is something that almost seems like an inevitability for the fifth consecutive season, and you pointed something out that I found interesting. The fact that they still play in leagues that only have 8 conference games, the fact that they didn't subscribe to the fad of moving to 9 like the Big 10, Big 12, and others have, seems to be an inherent advantage going into this season, because they've obviously been the ones who've won the college football playoffs the last 3-4 years.
Yeah, and thanks for having me on, Will. No team that has a 9-game conference season has won a college football playoff championship. Now, Ohio State did the first year, but they were playing 8 games in the Big Ten then. So that would seem to indicate something, that maybe the grind, a lesson learned maybe, works out to their advantage. But look, when you talk about Alabama and Clemson, once again, they had, going into the season, they have separated themselves from everybody else. If you want to boil down the season, it's almost Alabama, Georgia 3, and then, you know, Clemson, Alabama 5, I guess is what we're talking about, 5 straight years. So until further notice, that's what it is. And maybe that the number of conference games is just a feature of that.
And it has turned college football into the opposite of parity. It almost seems like a preordained situation. How concerned are the power brokers in the sport that it has come to this?
Well, until ESPN isn't getting its $720 million worth back in ad revenue, then it will be a thing. I don't think it's an issue right now because every barometer I see that matters is trending up. The ratings are up. Attendance is down slightly. It's at a 22-year low. But I think this game is going where a lot of professional sports is going. It's becoming almost studio football where, yeah, it's a concern that you're not holding on to those legacy fans, those students that 20 years from now will be at their peak earning period and contribute to a program. But it's not something in the moment that bothers a lot of people except athletic directors. People are still very interested in the game. I think the Alabama-Clemson storyline, you know, sustains the season. I have to give ESPN a lot of credit. When they start those Tuesday night shows, and as contrived as they can be, you know, we all know who the top four are going to be, but they stretch it out for half an hour. People are watching that. It's must-see TV. So the game itself is healthy. Now, if we can get out from underneath the head trauma and the litigation and everything else, it'll be even healthier.
Dennis Stott, CBSSports.com, joining us here on 92.9 The Game. Your colleague Barrett Salib put out a piece on the Dabo Swinney-Kelly Bryant issue involving the ring. I don't want to say I'm not necessarily passionate about it. I just thought that for somebody who controls the message and controls things like distractions as well as Dabo Swinney does, I feel like he probably would have been better served just to give him a ring because it's more of a story if he didn't get one. I don't know where you fell on that.
Yeah, no, I agree. It seemed petty. I can't think of a compelling reason why you wouldn't give him one unless what Dabo Swinney is saying about Kelly Bryant every step of the way isn't true. He's a great player. We wish him well. He helped us. He's great. Made him give him a ring. Well, why? I can make a compelling argument that they don't win that A&M game without Kelly Bryant.
Correct.
At that point, they were going, you know, they were back and forth on quarterbacks. They were sharing downs. Kelly Bryant played the last six series of that game, and that, in essence, was the closer. When the game had to be won on the road against a tough opponent, Kelly Bryant was the go-to guy. Now, 2 or 3 weeks later, he lost the job and then transferred. But, you know, he didn't trust Trevor Lawrence to finish that game. For that reason alone, he deserves a ring. But, he had put in his time. He played there 4 years or parts of 4 years. But I think he deserves a ring. And someone needs to tell me, why he doesn't deserve a ring. And don't come at him with disloyalty because he put in his time. He was loyal to that program.
It's funny. You had a better seat for that game than I did only because you were one row in front of me in the A&M press box. So there was some rule that was brought up by a colleague of mine that apparently you have to have been eligible on the roster to play in that game, and that way you can't receive a gift, which basically is akin to that particular game. But I'm sure they could have figured something out. Don't you? They skirt NCAA rules all the time, right?
Yeah, for $9.2 million a year, Dabo could swing a little power and maybe get Kelly a ring.
Correct. That's kind of what I thought, too. To Georgia, closer to home, this is something where I look at this team and I really like it because I think that they have all the kind of pieces coming together. That offensive line, which Kirby Smart has looked to rebuild over the last couple of years, has finally come into its own. I like the defense. The only thing I don't like is the wide receiving core and the fact that I almost feel like a window might be closing at the wrong time with Fromm in his third season. Where do you feel the balance is for Georgia going into this fourth year under Kirby Smart?
Yeah, I like Georgia, and I still like Georgia without Holland on the lack of depth at receiver. Because I defer to Kirby. I wanted to see how he dealt with this at SEC Media Days. And he basically said, we'll develop depth. He didn't seem too concerned about it. What else did he say? But he said it with such conviction that, I bought into it. I think they'll be okay. I said before Holloman left the team that I thought, Jake Fromm would be a 70% passer. He'd have a big season. Obviously they're going to be very good on both lines, DeAndre Swift, everything else. I'm not so sure it's going to be 70%, and I think the lack of receiver depth leaves them open to maybe a loss or two during the season. Two of them leave them out of the playoffs. You still think they're going to be East and play for the SEC title. But we'll see, and it may be that. Jake Fromm is a pretty savvy passer. He's not as physically gifted as Kyler Murray or Tua or Trevor Lawrence. But he's not going to get you beat. I'm not insinuating game manager at all because he's a difference maker. But I think, you know, that's why you have August camp, to develop that depth. And I just bought into it when he said it. I think it'll be fine.
Dennis Dodd, CBSSports.com, national college football writer, joining us here on Sports Radio 989 The Game as we go around college football. I don't think there was no greater level of sorcery in college football a year ago than Dan Mullen willing a team to 10 wins with a guy starting at quarterback who was a 58% passer in Felipe Franks. Yeah. I'm not necessarily a believer in him. Are you?
I think under Dan Mullen I am. When I stopped and saw the numbers at the end of the season, I think the word I use is wizardry or something. 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, got him through a double-digit win season, and did something to him. I mean, look, he's one of the – let's not forget, Dan Mullen's one of the premier quarterback makers in the country, along with Urban and a bunch of other guys. Yeah. Felipe Franks got qualitatively better as a quarterback under Dan Mullen. Again, having talked to him at the SEC media days, I saw that confidence in his eyes, too. What a specimen. 6'4", 245, I want to say, or 230 maybe. Felipe Franks, I thought he had a great season last year, and Dan Mullen pushed that into him.
Obviously, when you think about the SEC and a potential dark horse, the name that kind of always kind of gets brought up is Missouri. Is it more about Bryant or more about the schedule?
I think it's both. I mean, I think you can envision them being 8-0, I think in November, going to Georgia because Kelly Bryant's there, but because they're pretty good. I mean, look, they had absolutely nothing behind Kelly Bryant. They went out and not only got him, Kelly Bryant chose Missouri. I still haven't figured that one out. When you're Kelly Bryant and North Carolina is right there to the north of your homeland where you came from, Auburn is a championship program. I can see Arkansas. Arkansas had a couple of quarterbacks. But, you know, he was basically gifted the job at Missouri, but it's not a championship program traditionally. But he did need to get on film if he hopes to do things at the next level, and he chose Missouri. I thought that was a huge endorsement to the program. The schedule helps. They have most of their tough games at home to the point that, you know, they play at Georgia in their toughest game probably of the regular season in game 9. So I can see them being 8-0. I can also see them being 9-3 or 8-3 at the end of the season.
Because somebody took him probably to CJ's or Booch's, Dennis. That's probably what was the closing part of that argument. How does Jimbo Fisher find success at Texas A&M?
Wow. And I've written that story twice, I think, in the last 2 years, you know, asking him that direct question. And he said, win championships. You know, for them, national championships, SEC championships. The problem is A&M came and won a conference title since 98, so going on 21 years. The only national championship was 1939. I would submit to anyone that, given the resources, Texas A&M has to be one of the most underachieving programs in the country. And I'm not disparaging Jimbo. I'm just telling you what the situation is. He went there because he thought he could win a championship and, at least for a while, become the highest paid coach in ball. But you have to see the campus. You have to see what they've done there. They basically said, well, because they could, they leveled one side of their stadium, built it up to become the biggest in Texas, got the biggest scoreboard, like a 1 square foot bigger than University of Texas, because they could. Mm-hmm. They spent $500 million just to, you know, okay, now as Kevin Sumlin told me a couple of years ago when I left his office, now we just have to win games. Well, that's a big part of this. And as long as you're in the West and you've got that cement ceiling that everybody fights in Alabama, it could be a perpetual 8-9 win run for Jimbo. And the question is, how long do the people at A&M put up with that? Or, because he has a 10-year contract, I'm sure he's out of this, and he's just outlasting it, to retirement and then takes over. But that's a big if. That's it.
I mean, I almost wondered why he made that choice that he made, because I saw a better path at Florida State, but sometimes the draw of the oil money is what brings you there.
He wasn't happy at Florida State. They were giving him the money people there were giving him things, but not the things he wanted. Investment in the infrastructure, maybe assistant salary, maybe facilities. They had great facilities. They got an indoor within this decade. They built an indoor there. It's a great one. But as he told me once, it wasn't the things he exactly wanted. And, you know, we've seen what Florida State has become without him, and I'm not putting it on the next coach there. But, you know, whatever it was, 75 million reasons is a good enough reason for him to leave.
Dennis Dodd's stuff at CBSSports.com is always the best. I'm sure I'll see you somewhere around these college football parts. Dennis, thank you so much for the time.
All right, well, thank you.
That's Dennis Dodd joining us here, CBSSports.com. He and I, of course, go way back from our time together, of course, at our alma mater, Missouri. When we come back, we'll talk a little Five Stripes football, and it's not going well for Mike Foltynewicz on the Braves mound today. Just to tell you about it, not trying to spoil it, but doesn't look good. And a big one today at the Benz between Atlanta United and NYCFC comes your way next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It's not a good thing. It's really not a good thing right now if you're the Braves. Folty gives up three in the opening inning. It's 3-1 Miami. You can't lose a series to the Miami Marlins. What? So this is like what happened last week. They look good against Washington, hold serve at home with a split, and then they lose two to Kansas City. Take care of Philadelphia. Take care of Washington. Hold serve with Cincinnati. Take two out of three against Minnesota. And you're going to lose three out of four to Miami? I mean, come on, man. Can't this aggression cannot stand. As my good friend Jeff Lebowski once said, quoting the great Jimmy Carter. I believe is who he said. I believe that was a Jimmy Carter quote from that movie. Anyway, the Five Stripes today on the pitch against NYCFC. Cryptic tweet from the Atlanta United Twitter account. We haven't gotten a lineup yet from the team, but they did put out a locker room scene that showed jersey numbers 6, 8, 10, and 11 with Nagby, Barco, PT Martinez, and Eric Rometty. One that was omitted was Joseph's number 7. Of course, as Paul mentioned, there's been some chatter about whether or not to use Joseph Martinez in the 18 today. Of course, was not available during the U.S. Open Cup. Adductor strain is what he suffered in training earlier this week. They seem to think, based off of the victory the other night, that they can get there without him. Villalba's also back, too, and Barco is back in the starting lineup. PT Martinez has been there as well the last two matches. It stands to reason that they might try to give it a go without Joseph, at least in the starting lineup, but I think you have to put him in the 18 if you think he's going to at least give you something, whether it's 20 minutes, 30 minutes down the stretch, if you need a goal against this NYCFC club, which comes in playing strong. 1 point behind and two games in hand. So a win is paramount if you want to at least keep the kind of pace that you're on right now in the MLS standings. And as we've continued to kind of say for the course of Atlanta United, sitting right now three behind Philadelphia, of course, going into the game today, Philadelphia's already played its game this week. So trying to get win number 13 on the board are United. It's hard because this is a part of the schedule that we've talked about is really just so very challenging, because you have this game today, then you have to play for a trophy, play for the Campione's Cup. And I know that as a result of that, you know, that's one that while it's the champions of Mexico and the champions of the United States, having that game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, I think, is a very huge statement and something you want to at least put your best foot forward in. But you have that. Then you have a league game against Portland, having to go up there on the road, tough contest, long travel. Then come back on a short week, play Orlando City for the second time this month, second time in that building, in a league game after beating them 2-0 in the U.S. Open Cup semifinal. And then, oh, by the way, you have the U.S. Open Cup final on the Tuesday against Minnesota before getting the team that you are basically jockeying for position with in the standings of Philadelphia. And you know, the end of August, I mean, they will be waiting. You know the song Wake Me Up When September Ends by Green Day? Well, wake me up when August ends when it comes to the Five Stripes, because from that perspective, you're wondering very, very greatly how they survive this stretch and this gauntlet, because it gets a little easier in the month of September, but not that much, because you have another opportunity against NYCFC near the end. You play New England at home to close out the season and a couple of other games of importance, but none greater, it seems, than this little stretch of six games where you will be having your mettle tested on a night-in and night-out basis. And I'm not saying that even Portland's a team that has kind of been a giant killer over the course of the last couple of weeks, a team that themselves is fighting for a playoff spot. So this part of the schedule, again, just absolutely brutal from the standpoint of the Atlanta United side. I loved seeing the way that it kind of opened up for them against Orlando City. And this is not to be an indictment against Joseph Martinez. I'm not saying that at all. But you really see the real strength of a team when they're playing without a dominant top forward like that. It caused them to almost have to reinvent themselves in a way, with Miram and PT up top and Barco as well kind of flanking PT. And it because of that, I think caused them to almost play a more open-ended type game than they did. And I was surprised at how well they owned the run of play through the opening half hour and got the opening goal from Rometty. And they had worked hard up to that point. I mean, they'd earned that goal on a couple of very big sustained rushes. And then kind of let Orlando City back in the game in the second part of that first half and in the opening part of the second half. But then you get Emerson Hyneman. And I have to tell you, I don't know what the expectations from Carlos Bocanegra were and the folks in the technical team of Atlanta United were for Emerson Hyneman, but he has exceeded them, and he's played off in spades. Gets his first goal as a United player, basically a long diagonal ball from Eric Rometty that basically looked like it was billed for Escobar. He had the one touch to the center of the box, and Hyman made no mistake and gives the Atlanta United second goal there. And because of that, has become a guy who's a weapon for you. He's a guy who knows how to get forward. He knows how to basically play control, has a very, very great first touch, and somebody who has made the most of his opportunity. And this is a guy who's played on the Premier League stage at Bournemouth. He is somebody who came out of the academy in Dallas, somebody who has the pedigree of a player who can be somebody who was a part of the team for a couple of years. They're going to try and sign him possibly at the end of the year after the transfer comes about. John, he feels me there with a little Green Day. It's basically what it is right now for Atlanta. Wake me up when August ends instead of September, because this is a rough stretch to end the month and a rough month altogether, but they've held themselves very, very adequately, and they'll be playing here, right here on Atlanta United's home. 92.9 The Game with pregame at 3:30. We're going to talk to Jason Longshore in advance of that about an hour and 10 minutes from now. The non-sports story of the day that makes me smile and smirk is actually something that makes me smile, but I don't know how well this thing is being enforced here in Atlanta. And I'll explain when we come back on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.